Welcome to Channels, the interview series where we celebrate the stories of community-based organizations that make a difference. I'm your host, Nia Michelle, and I'm thrilled to take you on a journey through the vibrant city of Los Angeles. From the past to the present and into the future, we're here to capture the essence of the interconnected culture that defines this incredible city. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired as we document the heart and soul of LA's community organizations. Today, we'll be talking to Rachel Day, the program director for DubLab, LA's oldest DIY radio station. We'll be discussing Rachel's deep dive into DubLab's history in her seasonal show, Where to Start.
Centers of realization, in realization of life we love. In love we know that we live forever and shine eternally. Eternal life is the intersection of the line of time and the plane of now.
So I just want to start off, I just like have an outline, and I wrote, I think it's funny that I'm interviewing you about archives and we have like a whole show about archives.
Yeah,
and I just wanted to ask, like, what made you choose to explore the DubLab archives?
Well, I'm the program director at DubLab, so my role covers a lot of things because the staff is pretty small, so it includes, you know, handling the daily broadcast, coordinating with the DJs on like a community level, and then also archiving all the shows. I now have a couple of people who help me with like the baseline of archiving, but for a few years now I've been working really intimately with the archives, and on that level, just, you know, seeing it pass through every day and seeing the archive build, I get to kind of like see firsthand how many great sets get contributed. What also has been informative for me is when I joined DubLab, which was just about 3 years ago, I volunteered for one event and then got hired full time, and I otherwise like knew a bit about DubLab, but not very much. So when I joined, I knew that I liked the energy of the organization, but I didn't know very much about it. So it was a really steep learning curve to catch up with the like 20 years. At that point, we were just about to have our 20th anniversary. The 20 years of history of DubLab that has so many different contributors and eras, and, you know, not to mention the thousands of genre and micro genres that go into every show. And so I feel like it was actually kind of a privileged perspective to be an outsider in that situation. I feel like a lot of people who come to DubLab already have a close personal connection with it and have built that over years, but I came in not knowing any of it, and so could see how overwhelming and intimidating it could be for someone who's just been introduced to it. That really informed doing this radio show. It's called Where to Start, so it's very much just goes along with the title of like, you know, I've passed it along to people, like new friends that I've met. I'm like, okay, well, if you don't know what Dublab is, literally here's where to start. Yeah. If you like any of these songs, then you can go to that particular archive, and then maybe you'll like that set, and then you can listen to that person's other archives for their show and just branch off from there.
Yeah. So it was kind of like your way of like approaching the material.
Yeah, and trying to make it more accessible. I think just trying to like give some kind of framework. And we've been talking internally about other ways of organizing the archive, because right now it's just a giant pile of like hundreds of pages that contain dozens of individual shows that just gets added to every single day.
Right.
And so unless you already have some working knowledge of like what Dublab is or a particular DJ that you're interested in, it's pretty like impossible
to
navigate.
Vast.
Yeah, it's really vast, and it's really like the tyranny of choice is strong, and it's really easy to just give up. So so the show is a way of trying to make that a little more bite-sized. And then also like having worked now for a few years at the station, there's so many DJs that I just feel really lucky to have gotten to know and to work with so intimately, and my role is facilitating what they do, and so it's a chance for me to brag about them to people also.
You feel 100%.
I said I have to have that. Because I never felt comfortable being poor. I just don't. Or even middle class doesn't suit me.
Do you want me to say who I am and all of that?
Believe me. believe
but it's still a thing. It's a small thing, but you absorb it, you take it. But it's still a thing. It's a small thing, but you absorb it.
Peppa La Beja, Peppa La Beja. Give her some walking
music. Liz Taylor is famous.
No, you have to make room for Peppa La Beja. Peppa La Beja.
Peppa
La Beja. Give her
pretty.
Some walking
music. Liz Taylor is famous.
No, you have to make room for
Peppa. Can pass the untrained eye, or even the trained eye, and not give away the fact that you're gay.
When you're going through the archives, like, do you ever get information fatigue? And what you were describing, like, approaching all the vastness and being like, where do I, like, how do I choose?
Yeah, well, and the show actually has been really helpful in that regard because I'm listening to way more than I had been before. And it is because, you know, I'd be doing the daily archives and would see, like, this person's tribute to J. Dilla seems really cool. And, like, even for me, like, even I was, like, dealing with them so hands-on, they would slip through the cracks and then it'd be impossible to try to retrieve them. So now I just have the parameter of I want to make it my way through all of the shows at some point, and then I'll start from the top, and there'll be new shows that get added and guest slots. But that at least breaks it down a little bit for me, and prompts me to sort of take a survey of the scope of them all. Beyond that, I don't really know how to deal with the information fatigue. I think we're like still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I feel like that's something too that I come across when I'm just like doing research for any project. There's always a moment where I'm just kind of like a little overloaded with information. I'm like, whoa, like I need to make an outline or like some kind of guide to get me through all of this material.
The show has been like, it wasn't the like initial intent. It was really just to like spotlight the shows, but it has been a way of organizing that for myself, of like having a kind of outline for me to engage with it all. Yeah.
So is there like a particular way that you decide like which shows that you want to feature, or is it just kind of like...
You know, there might be some that I'm, like, initially attracted to and will listen to, but otherwise I have the list of all of our shows and I'll just, you know, I'm keeping tabs of the ones that I already covered in the show and ones that I have yet to get to, and then, and trying to keep a little bit of a variety of genres, but otherwise just, I don't know, doing what I can.
Yeah. Is there any particular, like, FM or AM station that, from any period of time, that, you feel inspired by or you feel like got you to this point?
Well, like a lot of people at Dublab, I did college radio. I went to Wesleyan in Connecticut, and there's a really cool college station there. And I started doing a show my sophomore year that I continued through my senior year. And that was actually, I still want to pick that show back up. That was why I originally reached out to Dublab, was just to start that show up again. And I have yet to do that years later. But that station was great. I was able to do a few different kinds of shows, and I think college stations just generally are really fun. I think the structure of FM is nice for a college setting because there's a certain amount of rigor that has to go into just like the logistics of handling an FM station and like dealing with the FCC and all that stuff. So it creates enough structure for college students to like be accountable, and then, you know, then college students will be college students and they go in like whatever direction they will, which is cool. It's like Dublab, like people are a little more, you know, a lot of them are like professional DJs, but we have no structure within the station, so it kind of, it has a similar ethos but the inverse, where like the station itself is sometimes a little too loose. The DJs have, you know, they're older, they're a little more committed in some ways, but it has some of that vibe. Beyond that, though, there was also a student who was a few years older than me at Wesleyan, Mickey Capper, and I feel like I need to reach back out to him and say, like, Mickey, you were such an inspiration for a lot of things that I did at Wesleyan, and one of them was radio. I think he is, like, a really exceptionally playful and ingenious person and would come up with so many good ideas and like then take them through. And one of them was within DIY Collective, which was this group, student group that he started that then I took over. That was basically just like a way to get funding from the school for whatever you wanted to do. You could just do whatever project you wanted. And he and a couple other friends built like a shortwave FM I'm pretty sure it was FM, but it could have been AM transmitter.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And just did a pirate radio station and did the, I wish I could remember more of the little shows that they had, but one of them was profane calls to action, wow. which is just so funny because, yeah. you know, profanity and calls to action are like two yeah. things that you're specifically not supposed to do on
radio.
Yeah. And so they'd be like, you know, much more creative, but essentially like, go and fuck your mother, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
Like that sense of humor and like, I don't know, just taking systems that are in place and then just tweaking them and casting different lights on them in this really, like, joyful way. He was good at that in so many regards, but, yeah, I liked that little side project, too.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I love, like, the freedom that comes with, like, pirate radio and just, like, radio in general. Like,
yeah.
Like, DIY, stuff like that.
Left the trunk, right. Start it off, two men. Go.
How would you define the link between curation and facilitation in your work?
I would think of my role at DubLab certainly foremost as a facilitator more than anything. Mm-hmm. And I think, like just with the last episode of my show, someone commented like a curator curating curators or something like that. And because I think like that show happens, I am curating music, but really I'm like curating other people's music because it's drawing from other people's shows. And that's kind of how my role is at the station too, where I don't, whenever I approach someone for a new show, sometimes they'll ask like, are you looking to fill a certain like hole in your programming? Are there certain genres that you're looking for? And my answer is always definitely not. Like that's not, you know, I'm not gonna go really deep into one genre per se. I would keep some kind of eye to that, but for the most part, what I'm doing when I'm bringing new shows on is based so much more on like who the person is and then trying to help them flesh out their ideas as much as possible and then communicate that as honestly and truly as possible to bigger audiences. Right. So there is inevitably some curation in that because I'm choosing like which people to prioritize to bring on or at different points in time, but then it's really just all in their court. Like I don't really make any demands on what people like present in their shows besides like trying to get them all to turn in track lists, you know, yeah, just like the logistical side of things. But like, I think my role is mostly to just like be excited about what people are doing and be as much of a cheerleader in that as possible to try to just like encourage them to go deep and hard into what they are interested in and what they're excited about. The curation, I guess, is just on the voices that are getting added, but then it's all just facilitating after that.
You're just kind of helping out with the logistics and kind of guiding.
And trying to just like, you know, I've talked to so many different people about their idea, and in other jobs I've had too, that's kind of what my role has often been, is just like trying to understand what someone's trying to say and translating that for other people to understand.
How do you see like Los Angeles reflected in DubLab, if you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely really so tied with the city. Part of it is also that it's a really multifaceted, complex city. Honestly, even in the way that like DubLab can kind of be impenetrable and like hard to navigate and understand, I feel like that's not totally divorced from the fact that LA is like that too. Like you have kind of like put in to get something out of it. So DubLab has that trait in common. And then also just the fact that like the majority of our DJs are based in LA, but not all of them. Some of them, you know, maybe started in LA, but have moved away. Some of them have never been in LA, but they still contribute shows. And I think there's a certain timbre or quality that people share that's sort of open and flexible. I've been thinking a lot, it's been coming up for some reason frequently for me, this line from Joni Mitchell's song California, when she's talking about being in Paris, France, and she says it's too old and cold and settled in its ways here. I think there's a lot to be frustrated with about the United States, definitely, and California and Los Angeles, and I'm from here and feel really loyal to it, but I also get really bummed about it. But it's not settled in its ways, even if, you know, there's lots of different like places that you find gatekeeping, and ultimately I think there actually is a lot of space in LA, like, you know, and just physically that there's space in LA. If you go to a place like New York, the energy is so potent and dynamic, which is really great and such a big reason why I love New York, but you're also like literally physically jammed in with so many other people, and that does start to limit what you feel like your possibilities are. And even if like it's not like housing is cheap out here, land is certainly not cheap, but I feel like just having the actual physical space means that you there's just more feeling of possibility.
Yeah.
And I think that feels really important to DubLab. Thank you.
Dublab fits into the underground radio scene of California?
Well, I feel like I need to know more. I don't know if I'm up on my underground radio scene in California. I feel like I should be, but like I said, it was kind of incidental that I even ended up at Dublab. Like, I freaking love it here, but I wasn't trying to be in radio, so I'm not a radio expert, even though I, you know, have done it for years at Dublab and in college. My sense is that there is an element of just like Dublab has been around for 23 years, which is pretty long certainly in the scheme of internet radio.
Yes.
It's the longest running internet station and one of the very first to even use the internet for that like capability. So I think that there is a feeling of responsibility that we have, and hopefully a feeling of mentorship that other people have. I would hope, at least,
yeah.
People feel like they could, like, come to, you know, then people do, like, just yesterday, Frosty, the founder, and I were talking to the KXSC, the student staff there, about one of their fundraisers, so I think we try to, like, make it clear that we're open and, like, available to help other nonprofits and other radio stations.
So, like, Dublab is, like, a resource.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
And, you know, depending on who you ask, some people are like, oh my God, Dublab, I love it, and it's so important, and it's meant so much to me, and then other people have not heard about it at all.
Yeah.
So it really, like, runs the gamut. So it's hard to say what our place is in the history of underground radio. It depends so much on who you ask, but we have just been doing it for a long time. So
Right. If
nothing else, we just have the years of experience under our belt.
You guys are like the grandfather
of
radio, the grandmother of radio. Would you consider Dublab to be an underground station since you guys have been around for so long?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I feel like something that maybe not in those exact words, but that kind of like idea we've been considering for particularly the last couple years, because we've also been doing projects like with LACMA and with the Music Center, and those are good partnerships, but they're also not like trademark underground scene partnerships. This is something that comes up between the director Ale and I a lot, because he's been around since pretty much the beginning, and he's been director, and he's, you know, 20 years older than me. He's been doing it for a long time. He has kids. Like, he can sometimes feel like he wants something to show for having done this for so long and grinded for so long and made so little money for so long. And so it does feel good to have kind of like partnerships with these other institutions and to feel like Dublab has its place in that lineup.
Yeah.
And which I think is understandable. I tend to feel much less inclined towards that. And part of it is also because I'm kind of sheltered within my position at DubLab. I don't really have to do, I mean, I haven't been doing it as long as him. I don't really have to like spearhead the fundraising. So I get to be right. the kind of like idealistic teenager.
Yeah.
You want like to in the family in... who yeah. is like, we have to stay pure to our roots. And Ollie's like, this is not false to our roots. And it's just nice to get this recognition. And so I think we kind of toe that line, and it's something that's kind of a constant conversation.
Yeah, it's kind of like a blend between the name of that radio station that you mentioned that inspired you
in
college.
Yeah.
Like kind of like out there.
Yeah.
Just like breaking all the rules kind of stuff.
Totally.
Like,
yeah, well, and that's the thing too. And that's part of why I love Ali so much, is because he has that slant, but then he also, more than like anyone else on the staff, is willing to do those like funky, weird projects that like require so much work, but then you do it and you show up and it's actually like really amazing yeah. and is helping this person who like nobody knows but is been making amazing music, or like, you know, whatever it is. Like Ale's like the most committed to maintaining those like real like underground kinds of connections and like support systems, and right. so I think that does really run through the organization, and it's kind of, it's just, I think part of what the difficulty has been is maybe like how we communicate that and like hone that in our messaging, and like how we present ourselves for what we're available for different communities.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time? Just like me, they long to be closer, closer to you. Ooh. Closer, baby, closer to your love.
What would you make a shrine for, and what would you put into the shrine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is like a idea that I've often thought about, but thought about in terms of wanting to think about it. I've always been like, because I have a friend who has a shrine in his house, and he's always like, he's an artist and like always adding different things, and I'm like, that's really nice to have. I need to have that, but I haven't gotten very far in it. I mean, one really obvious one for me definitely, and for this now for the station too, because I've kind of pushed it on the station, are the Karita Kent art rules, which are up there above the door.
Cool.
Back there.
Yeah. It's like her manifesto, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I went to Immaculate Heart. She taught there like, you know, decades before I was there. But those rules are really core to what I do and core to how I approach DubLab, and I think also are very aligned with DubLab's ethos as well. You know, like the very last line on it is there'll be new rules next week, and I think DubLab stays really committed to openness to change, even if we're not always super successful at it. I mean, I think we're often successful at it, but sometimes, you know, you could always be better. There's always room for improvement. That would definitely be maybe the background of the shrine. Otherwise, I'd have to think about it.
I just wanted to ask you about this space that we're currently in, because you guys used to be located on like Virgil, right? And then you guys are in this new building that's pretty. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
like it's like
pretty grand.
Yeah.
We were at the studio above the Virgil on Virgil in Santa Monica for 18 years, and then got not exactly asked to leave, but kind of, and we didn't really know what we were going to do. So, you know, Ale had started looking at options and talking to different people, and then one of our board of directors, Joel Chen, who also has a DubLab show, JF Chen Radio, reached out because he had friends who had just bought this building. And so Joel connected us with them. It's a young couple. Robin and the couple uses the upstairs as her studio, and we met them, and they liked DubLab and liked the vibe, and they were looking for pretty particular neighbors to share downstairs, because they didn't want a business, they didn't want another artist studio, they wanted something really kind of like, I don't really know what else besides DubLab could fit here, actually, you know, this kind of business, this mix between, like, you know, it's a nonprofit, it's organized, but it also is pretty like free-flowing as well and creative. So Joel hooked us up, and a lot of the furniture that you're seeing is also from Joel, because he owns a furniture store. He bought a different building to move his store into, and that building was an old school. So like what we're sitting on now, all of these nice wooden tables, all the chairs, that like big divider thing over there were all from the building that he purchased, that he just donated to us. So Joel is board of director of the year, or the decade.
Oh, awesome.
He really like hooked it up. Yeah, so the building, and it's amazing because Justin and Robin, the owners, are, like I said, they're really supportive of the station, and so they are renting it to us for the same rate as our old studio, which had just been like, which was affordable, but you also, in that case, got what you paid for in terms of, like, it's pretty grungy. So now we were able to, we have double the square footage. We're working with some architects. Actually, one of our Dublab DJs works at this architecture firm, Stainer, and so Stainer is going to be, we did a bid process, but we just liked their proposal. We thought it fit the best, and so they're working on a design for the studio, because this is just a big cavernous space. As much as everyone would love to be able to just like DJ out in this giant space, already I and another staff member have done that and have gotten complaints from the neighbors. Let anyone else do it now. So we'll be building a studio within it, and hopefully it'll complement the space and add to it, you know, and not take away from the grandiosity.
Yeah, I'm excited to see like what the future of the space is going to look like, because I'm sure it can only get cooler.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, as we live and breathe in it.
Do you know what year this building is from?
I think it's, there's a plaque at the front because it's a historical building. I think it's 1924.
Wow. Okay, cool.
Give or take.
Yeah.
A year.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right.
Yeah, it's an old Department of Water and Power building. It powered, like, I don't know the radius, but a pretty big radius around this building. What this was where the energy came from, and so the building itself is built to withstand literal explosions. Like, it's like literally. That's why these giant cement pylons are here. Like, it didn't need to be retrofitted because it's earthquake. It's just like really solid.
Wow. So this building will be here. Dublab will be here after the apocalypse.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Not just the building, but Dublab too. We'll be here after the apocalypse. Yeah.
Just DJing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that you just want to say?
Well, something I was just talking to a friend about this morning. I have a lot of friends who are musicians and artists in different ways, and they'll kind of like bounce around between work. And I used to have different jobs that were more like, you know, like I would work on film sets, so it would have a beginning and an end. And it's been a really big shift for me to be, as I've said, now here for almost 3 years. And day in and day out, I'm just like, put it a little bit in today and a little bit in tomorrow, and there's no real end to it. Like, I'm committed to Dublab for the foreseeable future. So trying to wrap my head around like what the idea of like practice really means, and practice within a radio station and within a community like Dublab, it's a concept that I find really beautiful and really motivating and also really intimidating, because there's just no end to it. You just have to keep trying and keep doing little bits at a time and have faith that they'll accumulate and lead you somewhere that you don't know where yet, but it'll be illuminated along the way. And so I'm simultaneously like, the grass is greener for all these people who have like the, you know, the freelance jobs that begin and end.
Right.
So I'm envious, but I'm also really grateful for the challenge of that, and grateful that it's within an organization like Dublab that I do believe in so much, and with my role where I get to work with so many different really great people, that I get to really try to step up to that challenge and just like stay committed to the long haul, but also not think far ahead at all. Just try to like be really present with
the, be in the moment.
Single email that I'm answering today, or like the single archive that I'm trying to finish today, and know that that like links to this much bigger tapestry that's being contributed to by so hundreds of different people. And I just have like one small hammer to contribute.
Yeah, just hammering away.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. That was like beautifully said.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for asking.
Channels is a monthly broadcast brought to you by DubLab. Our show hosts, Nia Michelle, Jordan Collins, and Lewis Thompson, took us on a journey through the stories of community-based organizations in Los Angeles. Don't forget to visit chs.cargo.site for more updates on upcoming episodes, and stay connected with us on Instagram at remote.channels for more exclusive content. Thank you for being a part of our community, and we can't wait to bring you more amazing stories next month.